This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Lac du Flambeau tribe and 10 other tribal nations in Wisconsin have partnered with AmeriCorps to implement programs to combat substance abuse in their communities. Miranda Vanderleest has more on the tribal program led by the Northwoods Niji community.
AmeriCorps members are stationed around the country to spend a year addressing challenges their community faces. Members will be stationed in Lac du Flambeau to put to practice prevention activities and engage with youth to improve their substance abuse environment. Federal Program Coordinator Sue Wolf says 10 people from Lac du Flambeau have been through the program over the last 5 years and says anyone who applies will not regret the opportunity.
And that's what we have found with the people that have been involved in the program. A lot of them have gone on to obtain jobs or start their own companies or get into the work field that maybe they wouldn't have before this. We've had college graduates that have been with us that couldn't get a job right away, and so they wanted some more experience.
Wolf says those who apply will be mentoring youth at the Lac du Flambeau School doing activities to prevent alcohol and drug abuse. Term of service starts September 7th and goes through August 2017. For National Native News in Northern Wisconsin, I'm Miranda Vanderleest.
The Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes public meeting is tonight on draft legislation to transfer management of the National Bison Range back to the Montana Tribes. Chairman Vernon Finley says the National Bison Range Transfer and Restoration Act would right a wrong that took place in 1908 when President Roosevelt created the range from 18,000 acres of tribal land.
It restores land that was illegally taken. It's in the middle of the reservation, and it was taken from the reservation against the tribe's protests and made into the Bison Range.
The legislation would transfer management of the Bison Range from one agency to another within the U.S. Interior Department, from the Fish and Wildlife Service to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The comment period on the proposal ends Friday. Canada's National First Nations Advocacy Organization and the country's National Police Force have signed an agreement to work together on issues involving Indigenous people. Assembly of First Nations National Chief Perry Bellegarde.
We all know there are issues with the police forces, whether they be the RCMP, whether they be city polices, municipal police forces, on how they deal with Indigenous issues, how they police, how they build a relationship, everything. We know that. The challenge becomes, how do you deal with that? How do you build a respectful relationship? How do you deal with discrimination and racism and the glass ceiling for our people if they can't rise beyond a constable? How do you deal with changing mindsets in terms of how people that are there doing an honorable job to protect and serve everyone?
The non-binding agreement includes promoting protocol and developing strategies to address discrimination. Royal Canadian Mounted Police Commissioner Bob Polson.
But I'm aware that this protocol is simply words on paper, and words alone will not improve things. I'm here today to pledge that we will put action to these words so we can continue the healing, continue the building, and improve these vital relationships in every way possible. The protocol spells out our intention to work together to ensure Indigenous people in Canada are safe, to address the distinct needs of different communities, and strengthen the mutual respect already in place in many areas of our country.
The agreement comes after meetings in December between First Nations and government leaders and police. The signing ceremony took place in Ontario as First Nations leaders, elders, youth, and citizens from across the country are gathered this week to discuss key issues facing their communities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support provided by Never Alone, a video game based on Inupiat tales and made in partnership with the Alaska Native community. Never Alone is available now on the App Store and Google Play. More information at neveralonegame.com. Support by the year-long celebration of Native American artist Lloyd Kivanu at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture, the IAIA Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, and the New Mexico Museum of Art. Info at nmculture.org/LKN.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And it's 6 minutes and about 20 seconds after the hour. This is a Juno afternoon this Tuesday, the 12th of July. I'm Ben Brown, and with me in the studio is Juno's one and only Colette Costa. Hello, Colette. How are you?
Who is more precise than Ben Brown? Answer? Alex Trebek.
Alex Trebek.
Famous Canadian.
He is a famous Canadian, and he's a very precise famous Canadian.
My God.
But we're not talking about Alex Trebek. We're talking about, Colette, your love child, the Gold Town Theater, which is a really important part of Juno's social fabric.
Well, yeah, I am part Quebec. I'm fairly Québécois.
Mm-hmm. Un peu Québécois ou beaucoup de Québécois?
Well, my mom would say Quetevache Québécois, okay. But that's a whole different thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a swear word.
Okay, well, fortunately, it was in Quebecois French, and so we'll have to assume
that. I apologize to that one person out there.
That one person out there at the Federal Communications Commission who otherwise would be horrified. So the Gold Town, I actually got to mention this when we were together a week ago Friday when your band was performing at the Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's some exciting changes that are going to help the Gold Town serve its existing clientele better.
Amen.
But make sure it's there for future generations. So tell us what's going on.
You're so good. Can you write my next missive, please? Because that was way better than... It took me 13 paragraphs to write that.
It was long, but I read it, obviously, since I know what was in it.
You're the guy. Well, we are instituting a new exciting membership program at the Gold Town. What do you call it when you do something before you need it to be done?
Proactive.
That's the word. You're so good at that. It is a proactive measure to, like you said, ensure the existence of Gold Town for the future. Can we be honest, Ben?
Let's be honest.
I can be honest with anyone, it's going to be you and the other person listening out there. Thank you for listening, Montgomery. I'm poor. I'm poor. I join the ranks of the poor people. And you know what? I'm fine. I've always been poor. I like being poor. I'm comfortable with that. I don't really like rich people unless they give me money. But I love the Gold Town. It's my favorite job ever. I don't ever want to not do it. But I started thinking about perhaps a time when I can't do it or whatever. And then I realized, well, this nobody else could do this for what I do it for because they won't.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's really, it's really unfair. I was thinking about that. I don't want to go too back far in time, but think about the diner and how that was my, you know, my other love child.
Right.
And
Colette's Ten Pan Alley Diner, located in the Merchants Wharf for many years for those who...
We're not going to mention that.
Yeah, though. Okay.
But I realize, you know, I do these things because I love doing them, and I don't want to have to actually get a real job. But I also think that the difference is the Gold Town is it's an essential part of downtown Juno, of all Juno. But having access to that kind of arts and having that kind of community-based venue is really important. And in order for that to continue, it's got to be more than simply self-sustaining. It's got to be able to pay for someone in the future who could be employed doing that. So I thought, well, maybe it's time I actually grew up and had a actual job.
And starting that process now will make it a more seamless transition at whatever time in the future has to happen.
And honestly... So I'm in an email thread with hundreds of theater owners across the U.S. art house, particularly art house theater owners, and this is something that is at virtually every theater in the country. It's just it's kind of when I tell people I don't have a membership program, they look at me the way you look at someone who, you know, doesn't have health insurance. Oh wait, no, that's everyone.
But there's no Affordable Care Act for cinema goers, so. The government's not going to step in and solve the problem. So someone like you needs to step up to the plate and think, if we had a membership system, it would raise some needed revenues, but it also would probably increase the brand loyalty and just kind of be a marketing tool.
And this is something I did know from the diner is the more you can empower your customers to feel like it's their space, the better off everyone is. This is my theater. And, you know, my desk, my office has always been in the booth upstairs. And in the summer, my windows are open. I can hear people walking by. Oh, I shouldn't tell you guys that. But you have no idea how often I hear people stop and say, "Oh, you guys, you should check this place out. This is our little theater." And it's them talking about it and telling somebody else how much they, you know, how sort of like how proud they are of it. And that's I'm not saying that to toot my own horn. And if you can engender your customers with that kind of ownership. It behooves everyone. And I really do try to make that everyone's theater as much as I can, and I've become aware that it's more important to more than just me,
right?
That it keep that it stay there. So
absolutely.
We have this membership program. We were working on setting it up online. I mean, I'm essentially an idiot, Ben. You know that. You've worked with me before. And so a lot of this stuff, like numbers and business, is beyond me. But I have an awesome group of volunteers and helpers who do those things professionally who have been helping me out. We're setting up, like, online purchasing and just the whole membership initiative has been helped by other people who know what they're doing.
And I got an email about it, and there's all these different layers of levels of membership.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the public broadcasting model, but not. But you can give it any amount that is...
Very, very fewer zipper pulls.
No zipper pulls, no mugs, but a lot of opportunities.
I mean, at a very high level, I could pull a zipper, but that's like, we can't talk about that on the air.
But so, whatever level you join at, the initial perk is you get a discount when you go to the movies. And the higher the level, the more perks you get. Passes to hand out to people, invitations to the Christmas party. You get the theater for your own debauched evening.
There's very little debauchery. This is a family event, Ben. Come on, except when you're there.
At the $5,000 level, there's no debauchery. I guess that's subject to negotiation.
That goes back to the zipper pull.
Okay,
we talk about that offline.
Okay.
There is, and then we have like the highest level, which I refer to as the Willy Wonka level, and it's more of a corporate thing where you get a free theater rental. You can have your party there. You get on-screen advertising. That's sort of in addition to the movies and whatnot. But the whole idea is not necessarily that you get these perks. A lot of theaters have membership programs where you don't get anything. You get the ability to sustain an art house theater in your community. And I don't come from people who ask for money, so I don't feel good just taking money and not giving something. So I thought, no, this is going to be a little bit of a tit for tat, and I just got to say tit for tat on the radio.
And so there's tangible and intangible benefits to joining as a member of the
Correct.
Gold Town. And, you know, I imagine at some point people will probably want decals to put on the back of their car. But
I'll make you a decal. I'll hand-paint that.
Hand-painted decals, and that's probably going to be at the higher level. So I actually got the email, and all the categories, the Willy Wonka down to the schlub who likes to go to the theater level, and many ranges in between. But at that point, I needed to print it up and then either write down my credit card number or bring a check in and do it. But it's going to be online that's possible to join.
It's going to be online later this week,
okay.
And I have little handouts at the theater. And, yeah, all levels get discounts on movies. All levels get free movies on their birthday. All levels get an on-screen thank you. And the knowledge of knowing that they are individually helping to sustain this
small business.
This whole
it is
project.
A small business. And, you know,
what's smaller than micro?
I'm sure there's a word. But the Ridgeways, Mark Ridgeway specifically, I had a conversation with this about this.
Did you get a word in?
I did.
Maybe
but only because he was like refilling my drink, I think. but this was many years ago, and he basically said to me in my capacity as the Arts Council chairman, you know, we don't get a grant from the state. We don't get a grant from the city. We're a business. And I said, well, you could change your model, but he's clearly chosen that he doesn't want to run a nonprofit. He's running a for-profit, a very small profit for-profit business.
What's the no-profit called?
A for-profit that needs a program like this
What's
to help.
What's the line between red and black on the profit margin?
Because
we're somewhere right below that.
It's the maroon-gray area.
Part of that, and I will say this, I don't know, because he has his own reasons, I have my own reasons, because that's a discussion we had. My own reasons are because, you know, he who pays the fiddler calls the tune.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the ability, an incredible ability, to choose our own marketing, choose our own programming. I can decide that, you know, we're not going to show a movie this weekend. We're going to do local programming. We're going to do the Jump Society Film Festival. We're going to do something for Reach. We're going to have something for PFLAG, whatever. And I don't have to, quite frankly, have bigger strings telling me what to do.
Or clear the decks and say, you know, we have to play this. We already told
Correct.
People we would. You have a lot of nimbleness. And you are really good. One element I think of your marketing is, you know, you're very readable, sometimes long-winded, but very readable and entertaining. The emails that you send to everyone, and
cotton kettles.
Those are gonna continue to come out, but
Correct.
Maybe they'll be blander and less funny if you're not a member. I don't know. You could have like the spicy email list and the not so spicy
email
list.
Well, it's like if you have a radio show on, say, an underground small shortwave radio, or you have a radio show on a big other radio station where you can't say certain things like tit for tat.
Uh-huh,
you know,
uh-huh.
That's the difference.
Right, right.
But also, in all comedy aside, not that that was funny, basically people can tell you what to say. And the bigger issue for me was when, let's say, a state goes through a recession, suddenly there's no more grants for arts organizations. Now what do? You're dependent on that, and I don't ever want to get in that position. Having been in a position where I had a business whose ultimate fate was determined by somebody with more money, I never want to be in that position again.
Right, right. Well, I'm pleased to report that even though Alaska is facing tough fiscal times, the State Council on the Arts does still have funds coming in.
Yay!
From the state, from the National Endowment for the Arts, from Rasmussen Foundation, and from the Margaret A. Cargo Foundation. But none of that money is going to underwrite the Gold Time Nickelodeon. If you like that business, if you want to see it continue, you need to call 586. No, no. You need to go online to goldtowntheater.com.
Goldtown Nick.
Goldtown Nick. Goldtown Nick. .com, not an org, .com,
because no,
it's a for-profit business. And very soon, any day now, you'll be able to join as a member, and then that's probably going to get people more of a sense of, wow, I'm a member, I should be going and seeing more movies there.
I should figure out, do they exist here?
Yes.
What's happening? What is this place?
Mm-hmm.
I heard that the other day. What is this place? Oh, it's been here for 15 years, no big deal.
Right.
And, of course, to continue as varied a programming as we can offer, and I'm always open to suggestions and ideas. You can email me, goldtowntheater@gmail.com, and, you know, consider this your theater. There's even places where you can do your own programming. Just ask me how.
Great. Well, so this is a great new opportunity. And
I'm super psyched.
You can get in at the ground level.
Did I mention we're getting new chairs,
Ben? Oh, and I think there's new
chairs.
New chairs.
We're going to have a new chair party that's going to blow your mind.
But only members are invited.
I hate to say it, but only members are invited. But
so,
dig this. We're going to rip all them chairs out, and we're going to have a dance party with my awesome new band. So think about that.
When's that going to be?
September.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, mark it in your calendars. Mark it eight, dude.
All right, sounds like a plan. Well, Colette Costa from the Goldtown Theater, thank you so much for being here on a Juno afternoon.
Oh, Ben, you silly thing there. Go get some sunshine, people. See a movie this week, though. Awesome, for sure, for reals.
All right, thanks, Colette. See you soon.
Bye.
It's 20 minutes and 20 seconds after the hour. I'm Ben Brown, and this is a Juno afternoon on Tuesday, the 12th of July. Our next guest is Dana Herndon. Excuse me. How did I manage to almost mispronounce both parts of your name? Dana Herndon, and
yeah,
she is here with the Renewable Energy Working Group. Welcome to a Juno afternoon.
Thank you so much. I'm here with Juno Economic Development Council, and we help facilitate the Renewable Energy Cluster Working Groups. So thanks for having me today.
And tell us about, first of all, how did JEDC get involved in this renewable energy work?
Well, JEDC has helped facilitate multiple cluster working groups across different industries. So we have the Ocean Product Cluster Working Group. We have Visitor Products Working Group that really represent different industries, strong industries that we have here in Juneau. And just to give some background, a cluster working group is an open forum of different individuals, participants of all kinds in a certain industry. So whether you're a business or a government agency or the university or whatnot. So anyone that participates in any industry in any capacity. So on Thursday, we have a meeting at the JDC conference room. JDC is located in front of Foodland. And we have very interesting things going on at that renewable energy cluster working group. So like you mentioned before, there was the Norwegian delegation. So that's going to be something very interesting that Paul Volkers and Jim Rehfeld will be giving a recap about.
And I think Assemblywoman Mary Becker was able to go over on behalf of the city and borough of Juneau on that journey as well.
Absolutely. And our executive director at JDC, Brian Holst, also went.
Right, well,
so there was a pretty large group, actually.
And it was, if anyone wondering is listening who's wondering, that was at the invitation and expense of the Norwegian and Danish government.
Yes. So to give some background on that, so Juneau District Heat, they made an announcement at the JDC Innovation Summit in February about this exciting project here in Juneau. And from there, the commercial office at the Danish Embassy came to Juneau and invited Juneau District Heat and a Juneau delegation to come to Denmark and Norway to really experience their district heating system firsthand and bring that knowledge back here to Juneau. So that's what they'll be talking about on Thursday at 3 p.m. So I encourage people interested to really go and find out more information.
Now, there's also going to be some information about the electric vehicle program and AEL&P, which is obviously a for-profit company, but is the electrical utility for Juneau, is trying to work out a way to make it easier to plug in an electric vehicle if you should be so fortunate as to buy one.
Exactly. So that's happening right at 3 p.m. So the meeting starts at 3 p.m., and the first thing we're going to get into right away is AEL&P is going to propose a special rate for electric vehicles overnight charging, and we encourage people that have electric vehicles or that will potentially buy one to come and really come and learn more information and share their input with AEL&P.
Excellent. And that's a really good opportunity as a consumer to get your thoughts on the record proactively so they don't do anything that's alarming if you find yourself
exactly.
having to pay to charge your vehicle. I know a lot of communities around the country, that expense is actually borne by the utility or mm-hmm. by the municipality. And I guess we're just in a new enough phase here in Juneau. We don't know exactly who's going to be paying to charge cars.
Yeah, and it's really great that, you know, we're opening this up for, AELMP is opening it up for community input. So that's really important. So that's happening at 3 p.m. And then at 3:30, we're going to be talking about the recap of the Denmark and Norway trip.
And I'm certainly no expert. As I was saying before we went on the air, I actually saw Assemblywoman Becker on her way back from that trip, happened to run into her at the Ted Stevens International in Anchorage. And she was very excited about what she learned. But I didn't learn that much from her about it. It's somewhat similar to the geothermal heating that has been put in at the airport, but those are facility-by-facility
right.
projects, and district heating takes it to a larger level.
It's a larger level, and I'm still learning more myself. But what's pretty exciting about it is that it's very efficient. Like, they're really going to be pulling water out from the ocean, from Gastineau Channel, and then using that to heat downtown Juneau
wow.
through a pipeline network. And there's going to be one single plant instead of each building and each house having its own boiler. So it's pretty innovative. So it's very exciting.
And anyone who's, you know, when you get that December bill for your electric heat or your diesel heat fuel, it'll probably be a lot less painful to pay that bill when that time comes.
Absolutely.
Yep.
We actually have it. I believe we have a similar system going on at the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute here in Juneau.
That's
so
exactly
this is just
right.
a larger scale of
exactly.
that.
And that was able to be built in when that facility was planned
right.
new because it was a new facility. And Senator Stevens had done a great job making sure the resources were there when NOAA was building out its new facility. But the airport's heating system was a retrofit of an existing building
mm-hmm.
When they remodeled it. So anyhow, anyone who's interested in renewable energy generally or this specific form of heating through geothermal renewable energy, 3:30 at the JEDC
3 p.m.
offices.
Oh, yes, 3:30 for that meeting, but the whole meeting in general, 3 o'clock.
Okay, so if you're interested in electric vehicles, show up at 3, and if you're not, be really quiet when you show up at 3:25 because they'll be wrapping up the electrical vehicle
yeah.
charging station. So a couple other things going on. Starting on the 21st of July, it looks like Alaska Startup Week is happening.
Right, so that's something that it's the first time that we're doing it here statewide, so it's economic development councils from around the state really got together and collaborated on this joint effort to create this Startup Week, which focuses on innovation and entrepreneurship. So it's a lot of different series of events going on throughout the state. that really showcase opportunities for entrepreneurs in Alaska, that encourage Alaskans to launch their own businesses and to demonstrate why Alaska is a great place for entrepreneurs. So it's pretty exciting. What we have going on here in Juneau, on the 21st, we're collaborating with the Juneau Chamber of Commerce, so it's JDC Chamber Collaboration, on a roundtable luncheon during the scheduled chamber time, which is Thursday at noon at the Moose Lounge, or Moose Lodge. And it's going to be a roundtable of seasoned business owners and budding entrepreneurs. So, for example, we have Sandra Lane, who used to own Taku, and we have Patrick Cornage from Adventure Flow. And we're looking for two more. So, but this luncheon will cover overall changes in the economy affecting small business, the state of entrepreneurship here in Alaska and in Juneau. And we'll be really hearing from them and listening to what kind of things they would have done differently, why they started business here in Juneau, how the business environment may have changed since they started their business. So it's going to be a pretty interesting conversation with people that really decided to invest their time in their business here in Juneau.
And Sandro, I think, is one example who started the business, ran it for a long time, and then sold it and, you know, did really well for himself. And that's a model for some people.
Mm-hmm.
Other startups don't want to do that. They want to just like Colette, who was on a moment ago, you know, is chugging along with her proprietor, Mark Ridgway, to keep that small business going because they don't want to sell it to anyone
right.
else. But they're finding ways to make it workable and sustainable on its own merits.
Right, right. So we definitely want to hear those different perspectives and this collection of experiences from different entrepreneurs here, from seasoned ones to ones that are just starting out.
And so the Juneau Chamber Luncheons, as you mentioned, have moved back to the Juneau Moose Lodge. They were
yep.
at the airport in the Alaska Room, and during the session they were in the hangar ballroom down at the Merchant's Wharf. But so that's going to be next a week from this Thursday, the
right.
21st at noon.
At noon. And if you need more information, the JADC Facebook page or the Juneau Chamber of Commerce Facebook page will be a place to get that information.
And segueing into one more initiative JEDC is working on, a new campaign called Choose Juneau, that sounds a little bit like the Chamber of Commerce's Look Local First.
Right. So this is really exciting. It started a few years ago, and now we're really starting to re-energize the initiative. It's a campaign. So the Choose Juneau campaign positions Juneau as a desirable place to live, work, recreate, raise a family, start a business, just basically, you know, really show people the reasons why we love it so much. So JDC and other local organizations came together. We just recently established an official steering committee. So our partners include the JAC, the Juneau Chamber of Commerce, the Downtown Business Association, Travel Juneau, Central Council, the university, and some private businesses too. So it's really exciting. It's going to be a great promotional tool to use here in our own town to get us excited about why we live in Juneau and to potentially use that to boost word-of-mouth marketing. But also what's really powerful about it is it's going to be a web-based platform that consolidates this wealth of Juneau-centric information. So everything you would need to, I guess, pull people and lure people here, it's going to be there. So whether you're an employer that's going to recruit talent to Juneau, or whether you need that just extra reason to convince your friends and family to move up here to this crazy place, or, you know, whether you just want to invest in Juneau, any reason at all, it's going to be that place that you go to that provides all the necessary information you need to make that decision. So it's going to have information on the economy, on housing, job opportunities, clubs and civic organizations, arts and culture, links to government websites, links to university, links to media, maps of neighborhoods, schools, pretty much everything. Like, that's where you'll go.
And so Choose Juneau is an initiative of JEDC. You just listed a whole bunch of wonderful partners. If people are interested in providing some input as this initiative is getting up and going, how would they do so?
Well, they can contact me, Dana Herndon, at JEDC. My number is 523-2324. And we absolutely welcome any input. And if someone wants to come and, you know, dedicate their time to helping this get this off the ground, absolutely, we welcome all input. Because, I mean, this is something that really appeals to all of us. I mean, it's something that consolidates all of our experience and all the information that we think is relevant to share with others to have them potentially be residents of this beautiful place.
Excellent. So that's the Juneau Economic Development Council's Choose Juneau campaign.
Right. And I can't take full ownership of that because it's us and all of our partners.
Okay, so we happen to have Dana here from JEDC.
Yes.
So they're obviously an integral part of that. And so that should be exciting to hear more about as it unfolds. And if you're interested in providing some community input about things you would like to see included in Choose Juno, contact Dana.
Right, and there's also a Choose Juno Facebook page, too, that's pretty active right now. So you can get information there. Just message me on that Facebook page and I'll reply.
All right. So we've covered a lot of ground here then.
We have.
The Renewable Energy Working Group meeting at 3 o'clock on Thursday the 14th to talk about electric vehicle charging stations, and then a report from the Denmark and Norway trip to learn about district heating systems.
Right.
The startup week, a week from this Thursday at the Chamber Luncheon on the 21st.
That's the kickoff event, yep.
And then the Choose Juno campaign. So, Dana, thank you so much for coming on
our
Juno afternoon.
Thank you so much.
And one more time, your phone number at JEDC if people want to contact you.
My number is 523-2324.
Dana Herndon, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 12th of July, 2016. It's the birthday of the poet Pablo Neruda, born in Parral, Chile, in 1904. When he was 19 years old, he sold all his possessions in order to publish his first book, Crepusculario, Twilight. Pablo Neruda, who always wrote in green ink because he believed it was the color of hope. It's the birthday of Thoreau. Henry David Thoreau conquered Massachusetts, 1817, went to Harvard, then worked in his father's pencil factory. He taught for a while, but he resigned because he didn't want to beat his students, which was traditional back then. He went to work for Ralph Waldo Emerson, moved into Emerson's house, tutored his children, and after he accidentally burned down 300 acres of woods near Concord, he decided to go out and live in the woods. And on July the 4th, 1845, he entered the woods living in a cabin he had built there near Walden Pond. Lived there 2 years, 2 months, and 2 days, cultivating beans, eating fish and salt pork and woodchuck, and writing in his journal. It took him almost 9 years to work up his journal into a book, Walden, came out in 1854, in which he wrote, "I wanted to live deep and suck all the marrow of life, to live so sturdily and Spartan-like as to put to rout all that was not life, to cut a broad swath and shave close, to drive life into a corner and reduce it to its lowest terms." It was on this day in 1389 King Richard II appointed Geoffrey Chaucer to the position of chief clerk of the King's Works in Westminster, which came with a good salary, £30 per year, but a very heavy workload. Chaucer had to supervise the building, the maintenance of a number of royal projects, including the Tower of London and Westminster Palace. But it gave him the chance to travel widely and to meet people of many different social classes, and probably was a help in enabling him to write his great work, The Canterbury Tales. And it's the birthday of Julius Caesar, born in Rome around 100 B.C., who managed to capture for the Roman Empire most of what became France and Great Britain, returned to Rome, entered into a civil war against his political opponents. Against great odds, Caesar won the war and forgave many of the leaders who had fought against him, which was his great mistake, because it was a group of those men whom he spared who began to conspire against him and who killed him. Here's a poem for today by Joe McDougall entitled Choice. You've come to the oncologist's office to talk about your options. You view the scans, forgetting to breathe. It's metastasized, he frowns, pointing to where and where. He ticks off the preferred treatment, the side effects, low rates of success. It's your choice, he says, closing your folder, but we need to start tomorrow. You think of yesterday, when you lived in a different universe, of a waitress, hand on her hip, asking, "Hun, you want mustard or mayo on that sandwich?" Choice, a poem by Joe McDougall from The Undiscovered Room, published by Tavern Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by LegalZoom, providing legal help to Americans with online services, customer support, and independent legal advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. And by Lumosity, brain training developed by scientists and game designers who turn cognitive research tasks into challenging games. Learn more at Lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And it's 36, almost 37 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 12th of July. This is a Juno afternoon. And my next guest is Russ Bouzard, and he's going to explain to us a little bit about the phenomenon of Pokemon mania that is sweeping not just our country, but Alaska's capital city as well. So welcome to a Juno afternoon, Russ.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
And tell us about Pokemon. Tell us what it is. For just assume that listeners know as little as I do, and tell us what it's about.
Well, 20 years ago this year, Pokemon joined the world out of Nintendo, and the company came named Game Freak. They released a whole bunch, 150 pocket monsters, and if you remember back to 96, there was Mania. There was card games, Game Boy games, and a series of movies that every child had to go see.
Okay. And fast forward, and this is the new online, live, phone app-based version of the same institution.
Yes. Nintendo has been trying for the last 20 years to get people to go outside and play, do it in various things. And Pokemon Go, which is the phone location-based game, is the culmination of all of that. They have made it so you have to go to different art in your community, along with statues, plaques, and in Juneau, churches.
Okay, and so Nintendo still has a designing role in the Pokemon empire, but Google is also involved?
Yes. I want to say about 5 years ago, Google created a company called Niantic, which hosted location-based games, one called Hangout, I think, uh-huh. And the second one called Ingress. And then about 2 years ago, Google and Nintendo came together for an April Fool's joke, where you could find real Pokemon on Google Maps.
I see.
And the then director of Pokemon, or of Nintendo, who has now passed as of 1 year ago yesterday, had loved the idea so much that they started developing a phone game for it, which developed into Pokemon Go.
All right. And so people actually play the game on their phones, but they don't just sit at home in a darkened room. They go out and about in their communities, and they're able to find these landmarks and I guess take pictures of them with their phones or somehow identify that to prove to the system that they actually found the landmark.
Yes. When a person goes to a landmark, like at the State Museum, there are three stops at the State Museum itself. A person shows up, opens their phone, swipes, presses a button on their phone, and gets a reward. Then sometimes you can drop lures, which will lure Pokemon to those locations so you can then catch them.
And who's out there deploying the Pokemon for the gamers to find?
Some sort of server that is managed somewhere in the nation. It's all algorithm-based, and I don't understand it fully.
Okay. So, but someone somewhere is deciding the State Museum is a good location to have some of these Pokemon at. And does the State Museum have anything to say about that?
At this point in time, no. The way that locations were assigned was landmarks, plaques, and I'm not sure why churches got picked, but in the United States, churches have been picked all over the nation.
And when someone goes to one of these venues, are they going inside or is it usually an external thing that they're photographing and making contact with?
90% of the things I've seen so far have been external.
Okay, because you might have to have some permission to go inside.
Yes.
Before we went on the air, I was mentioning I saw in the Washington Post this morning the National Holocaust Museum, which is a museum with a very serious, important, but serious topic, I think didn't want to have so much Pokemon-seeking activity going on there. So there may have been a few poorly chosen targets, but on the whole, it's a fun activity, and people are having a good time when they go out there to try to find these Pokemon wherever they're going.
Yes. Between me and my closest friends, we've all walked over 100 kilometers in the last 4 days.
So if you had a Fitbit and you were playing Pokemon, you could document how much exercise you were getting.
Exactly.
All right. So let's turn now to Juneau's Pokemon community. How big is it, and what sort of interrelationship is there between you and the other folks who like to play here in town?
Well, as of about 5 minutes ago, our Facebook group hit 200 members. And there are three smaller groups which all have varying member sizes. Not everyone's in our Facebook group, but when we walk around Juneau, if you go outside right now and look at the State Museum, you'll probably see 20 people sitting there. And not all of them are part of the group. So I estimate that there could be as many as 500 to 600 people playing in Juneau.
And for a town of 30,000, that's a significant number. And this is an international phenomenon. People play this in China. They play it in India.
Well, right now, New Zealand, Australia, and America are the only places where it's been released.
Oh, okay.
They were attempting a worldwide release, but then because America, we have 5 million downloads on the Google Play Store alone, we've crashed the servers in America. So Niantic, Google, and Nintendo said, hold on, let's pump the brakes and buff up our servers before we release anywhere else in the world.
And does the application cost anything, or is it free?
It is a free-to-play game, and you can purchase items in the game. You purchase Pokemon coins, and then those translate into items. Not necessity to play. You can play the game very well without ever spending a dime.
And are there, I mean, other than the fun of playing, are there any sort of incentives in the form of prizes if you, you know, really excel and you're able to find a whole bunch of hard-to-find places?
At this point in time, there's not, just bragging rights. And exercise and having a good time.
All right. But maybe in the future there'll be some sort of remuneration built in.
Maybe. We don't know at this point.
So the community group and the Facebook group you spoke of in town, you had mentioned that you're planning a meeting to get people together and coming up pretty soon here.
Yes. The community meeting isn't so much for the players or people who already know what's going on as much as it's for the people who have Pokemon locations at their businesses, homes, places of worship.
Okay, so you want to have the meeting to maybe make sure that there isn't any friction between people playing the game and the people who are otherwise at those locations.
Yes. A couple nights ago, some of my friends were out at a Pokestop, standing on the sidewalk, and the police were called on them because it was suspicious activity. It was 11 o'clock at night on a Sunday night. Most people aren't standing in front of a church at that point in time.
Right.
So I realized right then and there that if people were going to keep playing, there was going to be some friction, and I'd like to alleviate some of that friction before something bad happens.
Okay, so when and where is this Pokemon Go community meeting?
Next Wednesday, the 20th, at 6:45 in the evening, the Mendenhall Public Library, large meeting room.
All right, and if people have interest in maybe contacting you before then, how should they go about doing that?
They can contact me via email. My email address is russadelbizard@gmail.com, and I'll spell that out for you. RUSSADELL.BUZARD@gmail.com.
All right. So, and there's plenty of time in the lead up to the meeting a week from tomorrow if someone wants to chat with you about that. But really, again, it's not just for folks who want to play the game, but it's those who, and I assume at this point a lot of people associated with venues, Pokestops, might know. Are there going to be some people who maybe don't know that they're a Pokestop, and how would they go about finding out?
Well, as of right now, when I went and visited most of the churches, because those were my big concerns, were the churches at this point in time, most of them had no idea what was going on, but had noticed higher traffic in their parking lots. So the only way for them to know at this point in time is to download the game. As of this meeting next week, I will have a Google map up on the screen that has all of the locations listed out that we know of here in Juneau.
And I assume you've reached out to the Juneau Police Department, and maybe some of their information people might be there so that they can help field questions about that.
I have reached out to the chief's office, and if anyone in that office is listening, I'm still waiting for a phone call or an email back.
Well, Chief Bryce Johnson was actually here on the show last week. He's a busy man, but obviously that would be a great way to just interface between your group and the venues, just so you want the police to be aware of
that. That was the first stop I made, actually.
Very, very well done, Russadel. Well, that doesn't surprise me. You're a smart young man, and it seems like you've got a good handle on making sure that this fun activity remains fun and doesn't cause any unintended consequences.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so anything else you'd like to share with our listeners on a Juneau afternoon about Pokemon Go, the community meeting coming up, or anything else about this new phenomenon?
If you see anyone standing in front of your venue swiping at their phone vigorously, ask them if they're playing Pokemon Go, and please assume that they're not causing any harm.
All right. Well, good. Thank you so much. Russadel Bizard, good to see you, and thanks for sharing. And I've learned more about Pokemon than I new this morning, so that's something. If you're going to go to the National Holocaust Museum in the nation's capital, though, they're not really keen on it, so just file that away.
One last thing. The White House has a Pokestop at it, and it has been a vicious battle for the White House since the game opened.
I'm sure. Well, growing pains, whenever you try to put a venue like that in a game like this, it's probably going to lead to some friction. So, well, good. Thank you again, Russ El-Buzard, and best of luck as you continue enjoying Pokemon Go here in Alaska's capital city.
Thank you so much, Mr. Brown.
If you live in the Northwest, maybe you've noticed that those rusty orange speed demons that have adorned your flowers and nectar feeders since March, male Rufous hummingbirds, are fewer in number. The jewel-like males are moving out. They're heading south. Early last spring, they came north through the lowlands, in tune with early spring blossoms and insects. However, most southbound hummers take a different route. They follow north-south mountain ranges and take advantage of the flush of wildflowers and perhaps the updrafts at higher elevations. In fact, there's good evidence that some northwest nesting hummingbirds loop well east and then south on a seasonal air movement called the Great Basin High to follow a floral highway along the Rocky Mountains. By late July, male Rufous hummingbirds are pouring into southeastern Arizona, soon to continue south to wintering areas in Mexico. The females, who take on all the nesting duties and their offspring, will follow later in the summer some lingering until mid-September. Whatever your location, you can document the comings and goings of hummingbirds at Audubon's Hummingbirds at Home program. By doing so, you help ensure the future of these often brilliant and feisty birds. Though they're leaving, you'll find a link to Hummingbirds at Home on our website, birdnote.org.
And so it's about 51 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 12th of July, and our final guest today on a Juno afternoon is Charles Wilson, and he is here to share some information about opportunities for seniors here in Alaska's capital city. So welcome to a Juno afternoon, Charles.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
And there are a lot of seniors in Juno. There are more every day. We've got a fast-growing senior population.
Correct.
And we want those seniors to stay here if they want to stay here, I guess.
Absolutely.
And so,
absolutely.
So what sort of efforts are you undertaking to try to make that outcome happen?
Well, I was initially, I came to Juno initially as a result of just my having been blessed by God and having a successful life, and asked God, what should I do to provide services for others? And in my meditation and prayers, I remember coming to Juneau back in 2000, no, I'm sorry, not Juneau, but Anchorage and Fairbanks, 2005. And as a result of that visit, I happened to see a map with Juneau, a lot of water and green trees, and I thought, oh, what a wonderful fishing village, I thought. But I didn't know until I came here, because of divine intervention sent by God to come to Juneau. I remembered seeing Juneau on a map, and I said, oh, that must be a nice fishing village. And so I said, came here, and then I saw it was indeed a fishing village with 32,000 people, of course. It's nice. And out of that, just doing the research and found out that there's a huge need for senior citizens here in Juneau area. Many are having to leave the area to go for the kind of care and services that senior citizens are expecting and looking forward to. And as well, we want to have a youth component where youth that are couch surfers can come in and stay within the home and glean from the seniors who have been successful in their lives and provide to the couch surfing youth avenues for GEDs, getting their job skills, and even possibly going for college-level classes. And this will help to change things in Juneau and provide a wonderful base for seniors and youth to be successful in their lives by seniors paying it forward to helping the youth and youth becoming more successful in getting their activity together with regards to GEDs and job skill training and going for classes. So this is the kind of thing that we are trying to do with Prema Home Inc. is the name of the project that we're working on. We have a board with a 501c3, and our aim is to have services that are like the Juneau Pioneer Home, but a few notches higher, with a swimming pool and the kind of facilities that would allow for the present-day senior generation that are retiring. They have more demands and more requests and more aspirations. We're trying to fulfill that aspiration and request. The only area we are stuck in is generating the funds to build this wonderful facility. We've made application to the city for some of its land and the renting of subdivision, and it is our hope that we'll be able to access some of the land through one of the Dick Cheney, one of the attachés that works for the city. And that's where we are at this point in time in trying to make a difference in the lives of senior citizens, providing quality and providing the kind of systemic services that will enable them to feel comfortable and to age in place and to allow them to express themselves and have social skills and abilities and social opportunities such as are provided in the Juneau Pioneer Home. There's a waiting list now of 125 seniors that are waiting just to get into the Juneau Pioneer Home, and many others, as a result of getting tired of waiting, are leaving the state, and that causes a significant economic loss on the part of CBJ, which monies are not maintained here in the CBJ area. and we want to keep the seniors here if they so choose to stay here. Many do, and we want to provide a service for them here in CBG.
Well, that's a very ambitious project that you are a part of the effort to undertake.
Thank you.
As we discussed before coming on the air, there is a waiting list at the Pioneer Home here and in the one in Anchorage and the one in Sitka, and people mm-hmm. have to make sure their names are on that every year. They have to re-up.
That is correct.
So probably demand will always outpace supply for those housing opportunities there. So if people are interested in supporting your efforts, how might they go about helping you or getting in touch with you to learn more?
Well, a couple of ways. One would be phone number, which phone number is 907-500-8047. And the other is email, of course, which would be ibg.7000@gmail.com. Those would be sources to communicate with us. And if you would like, you can go online, and we have a webpage, PramerHomeInc.com. PramerHomeInc.com, that's spelled P-R-A-M-A, Inc., PramerHomeInc.com, and we have a nice web link that you could pull up and see who we are and what we're about online.
Excellent. Well, we're just about out of time here this Tuesday, the 12th of July. I want to thank Charles Wilson for coming on and sharing some of his hopes and aspirations for making Juneau as accessible and hospitable place for seniors as possible. We will all be, with luck and God's grace, seniors one day, and so it's the right thing that you're doing. Mr. Wilson, I want to thank you once again for sharing with our listeners here on Juneau Afternoon.
Thank you for the opportunity to communicate who we are and what we are aiming to do.
All right, let's go outside and enjoy some of that sunshine while it's still out there, okay?
Thank you so much.
And it's about 2.5 minutes before the hour. The weather forecast from our friends at the National Weather Service is for mostly cloudy with a high near 70, but it's actually sunny, and the thermometer in my car said it was 80 when I made my way here to the station. Tonight, some scattered showers, mostly after 1 a.m., and then scattered showers and clouds, 50% chance tomorrow, Thursday. But again, getting into Friday, it's going to be pretty sunny, and also on Saturday. So make some plans for this weekend. Involve being outside, and you won't regret it. The Juneau Interfaith Council is hosting a peace vigil this Sunday, the 17th of July, at 7 p.m. at Northern Light United Church. I also know that there's a garden work party that's going to be going on at the Jack, so you could call 586-ARTS and learn more about that. But otherwise, enjoy the rest of this beautiful Tuesday here in Alaska's capital city, and thanks for listening to a Juneau Afternoon.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming